Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's Wednesday, and so no Jared Jackson, but you got Brett.
Hey,
Brett's here, right? Everybody.
Weirdo Wednesdays.
Yeah, Jared's not here, but we have Brett, and impeachment has begun, and yep. That equals a JR. I think that's
Did
safe to say.
Did you just need two things to
including
make up
a historic
for JR,
impeachment
one
effort.
Of which was an entire person?
He's got a fan base. So, thank you for coming here, and especially because as
You're
I was
welcome.
Preparing for the show, I'm kidding. As I was preparing, I'm just joshing you. As
Josh, you need Josh too? There's important news, and you're talking
okay.
nonsense.
Everybody, thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning. No, but so as I was producing for the show, you were both producing a show, but also you were watching the impeachment hearings. I watched some of it, but I wasn't able to keep up with as much of it. So in just a little bit, we're gonna launch into what we've learned already. It's just a couple of hours into it. So we've got that. We've got a congressional candidate. We've got Stephen Miller, turns out, might be a bit of a racist. We'll break down the evidence there. We might have a really prominent Democrat entering the Democratic primary, and then we'll be closing out the show with what I think already is my favorite story that's ever been on this show. It's the most John story we've ever covered, so that's
yes,
gonna be
is.
A lot of fun. We'll see if you can figure it out from our little thing we've got in the middle. But anyway, with that, why don't we jump into the big news of the day?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, let's do that. Thank you for joining me, Josh. Okay, it is impeachment day. The hearings have begun with the former ambassador, Bill Taylor, testifying. And we were told at the beginning that there's not gonna be anything new, really. But that was not quite true. We do have a pretty big bombshell. But before that, Donald Trump, how is he greeting the beginning of this public impeachment hearing? Again, remember, it being public is what the Republicans have asked for over and over and over. Trump greeted these new public hearings with, "Never Trumpers." That's the whole tweet, and read the transcript. I don't know what the never, like just never Trumpers. Like usually to like manipulate a base, you have your little catchphrases or whatever, but you have to put it in some kind of context.
Well,
you can just say it. But, like it'd be like if like someone just tweeted bazinga, but there's no joke, which often there wasn't. But you're just supposed to have something. You can't just say never Trumpers, which, why, when? I don't know.
I mean, that's and honestly, if you listen to the opening statement by Nunes, who's the ranking member of the minority party that gave the opening statement as a counterpoint to Adam Schiff, that's essentially what Nunes did.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Adam Schiff very calmly, and I would argue too asleeply, did when he outlines here's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then Nunes comes in and literally just says things like, this is a sham. The Democrats are the ones who lied to you over and over again about the Mueller thing, mm-hmm. which was a witch hunt. And this is nonsense. Ignore it. The president's a patriot. He just threw, it's a sham, and all those catchphrases together the mm-hmm. same exact way. And it became very clear very early on that and then like petty little interruptions as an attempt to throw the Democrats off were the only arguments that they're gonna have. And in the meantime, if you wanna get to like how it unfolded, as Trump is doing this, Adam Schiff kind of just outlines it all, but then Bill Taylor comes out, and Bill Taylor is one of the most, one of the best figures I've seen in one of these types of hearings
yeah.
ever.
And look, it might be that Bill Taylor is the never Trumper that he talked about, but bear in mind the reason Bill Taylor is here to testify is because he was back in the US government as of earlier this year. And the reason he was there is because Donald Trump forced out the previous ambassador over weird things that Giuliani had told him, and apparently Lev Parnas might have told him now in 2018. And then they begged Bill Taylor to come back and work for them, something that they're probably regretting at this point. But that's how we got to Bill Taylor. Now, Bill Taylor was obviously involved in the text messages. That was one of the early big bombshells that eventually led to the impeachment hearings. But there's new information as well. So here is what he said as part of his prepared remarks that he read from earlier today. He said, last Friday, a member of my staff told me of events that occurred on July 26th. While Ambassador Volker and I visited the front, this member of my staff accompanied Ambassador Sondland. Ambassador Sondland met with Mr. Yermak. This is, I believe, one of the closest advisors to the Ukrainian president. Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. Or Kyiv, as they're saying in the hearings for some reason. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about, quote, the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump that the Ukrainians were ready to move forward.
This is the bad news bears, Keystone cops, group of folks you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Where Sondland is on the, or what was it, who was on the phone? Basically, during the phone call, Sondland
called Trump.
Sondland calls Trump, but the idea that a staffer who's like waiting to hear back, you can hear in the background Sondland make a phone call with Trump and just have a conversation. Or is this a phone call? I'm sorry.
It's a phone call.
There was another thing where like the staffer said, yeah, the staff basically just hears this all mm-hmm. go on.
Yeah.
And it's so loud that the staffer can hear what Trump is saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the way he tweets, all caps. That's how he's an all caps kind of guy.
It is so stupid, not to mention that there was a phone call and some people have been pointing out, like, by the way, if you do make these cell phone calls in Kyiv, like,
it's likely that they're being
It is essentially like, you know, yeah, just shouting it out in a public place.
Might as well, which they were also doing. Look, he meets with this advisor to the president and immediately calls Trump to let him know about the investigations. And look, I'm not an expert on any of this stuff, but the people who are supposedly experts say that ambassadors do not generally call the president after a meeting, and they definitely don't talk about very particular granular details of the negotiations. But in this case, they did. Presumably because it was considered important to Donald Trump. But there was one more graphic before we add more context. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. At the time I gave my deposition on October 22nd, I was not aware of this investigation. And this is important.
But yeah.
Information. This is also important because it directly contradicts quite a bit of what Sondland has said in his initial testimony. That was changed slightly when he updated it later on. But initially he said, I don't know anything about any connection between Biden and Burisma as of the summer months. But apparently he did because he was having conversations with the aides to the president and he was calling Trump himself to talk about it.
And every time you see Sondland, you should just completely disregard one of the central claims of the Trump defense, which is Trump is rooting out corruption. Mm-hmm. Do you know who Gordon Sondland is? Mm-hmm. He is a hotel dude from Portland mm-hmm. who gave Trump $1 million for his inaugural bull festival ball and was just like made the ambassador to the European Union.
Are you implying that those two things are connected?
That happened. One of the other three amigos, Rick Perry, it was just proven that right in the wake of all of this going on, the reason that Vladimir Zelensky is the president of the Ukraine is because he pushed out corruption, mm-hmm. right? And in the wake of all that, you have Rick Perry, it was reported by AP, Rick Perry shows up and is like, can you put one of my backers, one of my political backers on your advisory board? And wouldn't you know it, that backer is associated with a giant energy company that instantly gets a contract with the Ukraine.
Was it Hunter Biden?
It wasn't Hunter Biden, oh, believe it or not.
It sounds like classic.
That's the kind of corruption that they want to, that they live in, that yeah. is exactly key to their survival as people in politics.
Yeah.
All of this yeah. just, and a counterpoint to that is Bill Taylor, who is they listed like West Point grad, received medals in Vietnam, war veteran. Mm-hmm. And who are you gonna believe? Bill Taylor, who like was brought in by Pompeo to please save us from ourselves, mm-hmm. or Donald Trump, who who hired a guy as an ambassador who gave him $1 million.
Yeah, and by the way, Bill Taylor, if you go back through what he said, but also the text messages he's had, it's not like he was some never Trumper who was just like biding his time, collecting evidence to eventually spring on the president. Throughout this process, over those months, he was doing everything he could to get them to actually practice diplomacy and to not be pursuing these crazy personal goals of President Trump. He was trying to protect Donald Trump from himself. Mm-hmm. And for that, he's now being attacked. But yes, as you point out, the fact that Sondland is the ambassador at all is obviously corruption. It's the sort of corruption that we've just grown accustomed to in America. That's how a lot of these ambassadors are just big funders or friends of them or whatever. And honestly, at this point, if you honestly believe that Donald Trump cares about corruption, disconnected from any personal electoral concerns, I'm shocked that you were able to turn on the device that you're watching this with, because that's crazy to believe at this point. Even in the phone call, the only examples he brings up of corruption in Ukraine have to do with conspiracy theories around Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. That's it. He couldn't even come up with one other company that he has concerns about, or one other individual, or one other investigation, anything. And after all of this came out, weeks and weeks have gone by, he still hasn't come up with one other example of corruption that doesn't have to do with his own personal political enemies.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Taylor's pointing out. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly when Taylor said something's wrong here.
Yeah.
Is when that kind of stuff happened, when he started making it, and he clearly ties the withholding of aid to the pressure campaign by Trump and Giuliani that involves withholding funds for Ukraine.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, both Schiff and Taylor set up the consequences geopolitically, the things that actually matter. Mm-hmm. He's saying like people have died, people will continue to die
because
Trump is holding, and that is the definition of corruption. Trump is holding up military aid, holding up things that we the taxpayers are funding. And in exchange, he wants something just for himself.
Yeah.
That is corruption. That is the enemy.
And as many people have pointed out, quid pro quo, there's the actual meaning and then there's sort of the connotation. Like you getting something you want and me getting something I want, that I think is best described as a quid pro quo. But like when you if you're hanging from a branch off the edge of a cliff, and I ask you to do something for me before I help you up, it's technically a quid pro quo, but it's really extortion because you desperately need this thing.
And that's exactly what this is. This is precisely extortion.
Yeah.
He is getting something through pressure. Mm-hmm. And it is unethical the way that he's doing it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, a candidate is gonna be joining us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Joining us now is a candidate running for the California Assembly election for District 25. Welcome to the show, Natasha Gupta.
Hi there, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, doing well, how are you doing?
I'm doing great out here in California, right in Silicon Valley.
Exactly, not too far from where we are right now. So tell me about this race so far. What are some of the core issues that you're running based on?
You know, in District 25, the district I'm running in, this is really the heart of Silicon Valley. And in fact, the heart of where the issues of the progressive movement are starting to really hit home with the housing crisis, with the issue of student debt, and well, more recently with the wildfires that we had, and really the call for a statewide Green New Deal. And that is really one of the core parts of my platform. I'm talking about having a statewide action plan for our homeless, which puts them in a position of not just getting sheltered, but also retrained and rehabilitated, putting a mandate on us having comprehensive college cost reform, having a statewide Green New Deal that will allow us to transition to sustainable infrastructure, create well-paying jobs, and most importantly, deal with the most important crisis of our time in a proactive fashion that actually puts action on the table and not just plans that keep getting put off to address the crisis that we're in.
So look, recently I've grown increasingly interested in state and local level efforts to fight the climate crisis because of the unwillingness or inability of Washington to deal with it right now. So in your view, what would a state level Green New Deal look like? What would have to be some of the main components of it?
The main components really have to not just focus on putting metrics, but also eliminating a lot of the bureaucracy that we even see at the local level with establishing transit and emphasizing a strategy that not only talks about rail, it talks about expanding bus transit, something that helps the most vulnerable members of our communities get to places that they need to get to. And it is a very cost-effective way, as well as something that can really rid us of our car culture. We have to also talk about a statewide infrastructure plan for the most disadvantaged communities that are the biggest heart of where the climate crisis hits first, in helping them transition, whether it's reinstating the PACE program for subsidies for low-income communities to install solar in their homes, or we have to talk about expanding the California FAIR program for wildfire-prone areas that are low-income and have them have some pathway towards getting insurance and towards getting some kind of a recovery strategy for their communities, because they're going to be the first hit. And so in talking about a statewide Green New Deal, something that our campaign really wants to emphasize is not just the metrics of setting emission standards and not just the projects, it's also the implementation of it.
Okay, and talk to me a little bit about your background. How did you get interested in running in this race?
I'm a technology worker. I'm not somebody who comes from politics, although I was an environmental policy major in college. But I think the pivotal point for me came when, as somebody who lives in really the heart of Silicon Valley, a heart of where we have seen sort of the excesses of the tech industry boom, it's forced a conversation in our communities about how much are our elected officials really connecting with people on the ground here, and how present are they in the sort of initiatives that are really helping people and not just putting plans on page. And I hear this from all across the community in the hundreds and thousands of doors that we've knocked, that people are concerned about the housing crisis and not seeing a real executive plan from our state government that puts the politicians in a position of really being accountable to those that it hits most. They are concerned about the cost of college. They're concerned that they haven't, in some cases, ever heard from anyone who locally represents them, yet they're voting for them every year. I talked to one person in Alum Rock who said, you know, in 40 years that I've lived here, not once has anybody ever come to my door to ask me for my vote until today. And that just tells you how incredibly disengaged our political class is with those that live in the districts they're running to represent. And it's because the establishment has become so comfortable with being able to handily win re-election every year. And now, for the first time in a while since the incumbent stepped down, we actually have a competitive primary. We actually have a choice and a chance to put everyday people that live in our communities into a position of having a voice in our government and the decisions that it makes.
If people would like to find out more about your platform and your background, where can they do that?
Go to gupta2020.com, and you can find all of our platform positions and everything about how you can get involved with our campaign.
Okay, Natasha Gupta, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, a new investigation into Stephen Miller, important advisor to Donald Trump, reveals some disturbing information. We'll break it down after this. Stephen Miller has, against all odds, become a big advisor to the president on issues of immigration and related topics. He's been his defender in the media occasionally. And along the way, from things that he's said and policies that he's advocated for, many have criticized him for being, apparently, a white nationalist. Those people have gotten criticized in turn when Ilhan Omar declared that he was a white nationalist. She was attacked pretty vigorously. Well, now we have an investigation showing that he did quite a bit of work in emails to places like Breitbart to push a pretty obviously white nationalist narrative. So this Southern Poverty Law Center report draws on more than 900 emails, which is just too many emails. I would never want to send that many. 80% of which touched on the issues of immigration or race that he exchanged with former Breitbart editor Katie McHugh between March of 2015 and June of 2016. So in the beginning part of this, he's an aide to Jeff Sessions, a guy who's totally unimpeachable on these sorts of topics.
My God, Jeff Sessions the worst. Like that's the way in. Jeff Sessions known as before a Trump era was like really way too, you know, Mr. Racist guy for Washington. They just thought he was a weirdo.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that came up? I mean, look, you can, first of all, you should definitely go to Southern Poverty Law Center, read the report because there's a ton to it. But I want to touch on some of the highlights. So Miller sent a story from the white nationalist website VDare to McHugh on October in 2015. White nationalist Pete Brimlow founded VDare in 1999. The website regularly traffics in the white genocide or great replacement myth, which suggests that non-white people are being systematically and deliberately wiping white people off the planet.
And white people are supposed to wipe people off the planet. They're taking our job.
Exactly. Now, that back in 2015, 2016 was the sort of thing that if you trafficked in that idea, people would be like, what, are you out of your mind? This is weird white supremacist conspiracy theory stuff. But in the intervening years, it pops up all the time on Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham's show. It's been very normalized. But Stephen Miller was a fan of this sort of stuff going back years.
Right. And but even in like weird places that you wouldn't expect it. The other day, Laura Ingraham just said something about impeachment. We have to fight back to like defend our heritage.
Protect
our, like what? What is that? What are you talking about?
Yeah. She hates identity politics. That's what she hates. She just wants to defend our heritage from impeachment. But anyway, so look, that's bad that he's using VDare, which it's not like we found out later that this is a white nationalist site. It was a white nationalist site at the time. He was a fan of it. He was browsing it for articles and he was sharing them with people at Breitbart. But also, this is one of the most obvious things, and it pops up with a lot of people, including Steve Bannon. It is their love for a particular book, and that book is Camp of the Saints. So back in September 2015, he emailed recommending this 1973 novel, Camp of the Saints, which has been upheld by nativists and the alt-right as a cautionary tale about the effects of immigration. The book portrays brown-skinned immigrants from India as savages who eat their own feces and invade the white world of Europe. The basic idea of the book is that a huge flotilla of immigrants from other parts of the world come and invade Europe and take over all of their countries and rape and kill everyone and make the Queen of England marry her daughter to a Pakistani guy or something like that. It's one of the most explicitly racist books of the last half century. And so Stephen Miller loves it. Steve Bannon loves it. Racists from all over love this book. They don't often read, but when they do, they read Camp of the Saints.
When they're not reading Mein Kampf of the Saints.
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, in case it's not obvious from the description, in this book, there's so much that's amazing in this book. A white woman is raped to death by brown-skinned refugees. A nationalist character shoots and kills a pro-refugee leftist over his support of race mixing. And because the metaphors in this book are really subtle, all of the liberals in Europe who are trying to be nice to the flotilla of immigrants, they greet them on the beach and are trampled to death by all of the immigrants coming ashore. And so that happened. And anyway, look, he's sharing that. Now, the reason he was talking about it was because the Pope was saying something about borders at the time. And so he emailed a McHugh saying, you see the Pope saying West must in effect get rid of borders. Someone should point out the parallels to Camp of the Saints. Breitbart did that 18 days later, did an article about how it's similar to the Camp of the Saints. Because Breitbart too loves this book and doesn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, all the stuff. So this is the smoking gun, by the way, when it comes to Stephen Miller. We had all had feelings about it. We all kind of knew it from his rhetoric. People had pointed out his history and his career trajectory, kind of swinging from racist branch to branch of government. And now we have this trove of emails, and there's just one little bit from the original report that I thought was fun, is that the reporter was, quote, unable to find any examples of Miller writing sympathetically or even in neutral tones about anybody who is non-white or foreign born.
Yeah.
Like, they went through these 900 emails, and at no point did they say, like, did he say one person who wasn't white was fine?
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's who's pulling the levers of government. And so we need to go after this guy and get him out of government. It is essentially an email full of Klan hoods that we just found.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and in terms of getting him out, we're gonna return to that in just 1 minute, but just a couple more quick pieces of evidence just because I found it to be interesting. In a June 2015 email, Miller suggested that the beginning of Immigrant Heritage Month could pose a, quote, good opportunity to remind people about the heritage, again, that word, established by Calvin Coolidge, which covers four decades of the 20th century. So Calvin Coolidge was very Stephen Miller-ish when it comes to immigration, and established a law significantly cutting down non-European immigration. That immigration plan now, from our point of view, looks really bad, but at the time, it did have its enthusiasts and its fans. One of which was Adolf Hitler, who in Mein Kampf wrote about that law as being a model for what Germany should do on immigration. And that's what Stephen Miller is looking back to and saying, that's a great time, that's our heritage, let's talk about it during Immigration Month or Immigrant Heritage Month. We should talk about this Hitler approved immigration law. And then finally, one other thing, there was this mass shooting at Umpqua Community College, you might recall. At the time when it came out that this mass shooter had been spreading white supremacist literature and alt-right stuff, he was one of those sorts of guys. Miller was really incensed about this guy, but not about that stuff, about one other aspect that people weren't focusing on. So he emailed saying, the shooter is described as mixed race and born in England. Any chance of piecing that profile together more, or will it all be covered up? And then he follows up saying, your editorials need to make that the lead. Why aren't people saying that this guy who's spreading alt-right propaganda is mixed race? So this is who Stephen Miller is. That's all you need to know. And if you need to know what being a white supremacist of this like form does to you, look at a picture of Stephen Miller. It is corrosive. He's younger than me.
Yeah. He's 11.
He's 11 years
he's 11
old.
11 years old.
Most people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was, I don't know, it's eating away from him in the inside. It's very frustrating, and just the idea that he thinks that because someone is mixed race, now that like that's enough, and you need to point it out. Not the substance of all the stuff he communicated online or the actions that he took.
The murders.
Literally what he is genetically.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to look past like his deeds toward his genetic makeup, and that's that is exactly white supremacist. But I can't underscore this enough. He is pulling the levers of power, and maybe the best thing to happen to Stephen Miller is for this to come out this week.
Yeah,
because
maybe.
It is going to, this is one of the only shows that will mention it at all.
Yeah,
let alone in the first half of the show.
But there are people who are focusing on it, and so to what you were saying before, Ilhan Omar tweeted, as I said earlier this year, Stephen Miller is a white nationalist, and now we have the emails to prove it. This type of racism and hatred has no place in our government. Miller needs to step down.
So Miller, who is the guy who did all this white supremacist stuff, when Ilhan Omar pointed out the things we already knew about him, they called her anti-Semitic.
Exactly. And AOC has started a petition to get him out of office. So if you search demand Stephen Miller's resignation, that should come up. And so good job on them on a news cycle that is admittedly packed with other stuff. They're not gonna let this guy get away with staying as an advisor to the president on immigration issues when he is an insane racist on these issues. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, lots more to get to.
So why am I not gonna watch this hearing tomorrow? Because I think it is a threat to the presidency. I don't wanna legitimize it. It's un-American, it denies the basics of due process.
So that is Lindsey Graham, the guy who wanted you to know like 6 weeks ago that he was keeping an open mind on all this, and he would be really disappointed if evidence came up that Donald Trump had engaged in a quid pro quo with Ukraine. Now he's not even gonna watch it. Why? Because it's a threat to the presidency.
It's like a kid who's like, I want a unicorn to the babysitter. The babysitter's like, what? I want a unicorn. And you're like, unicorns don't exist. He's like, I want this thing that is completely something I made up that doesn't exist. And then you find, and then the parent who like cares is like, all right, we'll get a horse and we'll put a little horn on it. We'll give you a version of what you want, even. And this is us being nice to you. And they're like, it's not a unicorn. It's like, what are you? You're just throwing a tantrum because you didn't get that fictional thing you asked for, even though we kind of gave it to you. It's just like an annoying little
experience.
This is a real personal experience. It's just like, it is very obvious that they never actually wanted this in the first place.
And, a public hearing?
The through line of the Republican defense against the phone call is it's just a series of like handfuls of spaghetti. They're not even throwing it at a wall. They're throwing it in your face. Like, take this. And you're just like, that's stupid. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it's shot down. And this is the 15th handful of spaghetti. And by now it's like all limp and gross. Do you want another metaphor?
No, that's enough for the rest of the show, honestly.
Sorry.
Yeah, the rest of our friendship. The reason I want to talk about this is I want to give you an idea of the seriousness with which politicians and right-wing media figures are going to engage with this process as it goes forward. Now, I want to start right on the first day. So on the night impeachment eve, Lindsey Graham says he's not even going to be watching it, which is a lie. They're all paying attention to it. Trump also said he's not watching it. He's, as you pointed out, he's live tweeting everything
but
about
that,
it.
Like Stephanie Grisham herself, Peter Alexander tweeted this. Stephanie Grisham's like, no, he's in meetings all day. He's working. He is not watching this.
Yeah.
And then you just go on Trump's Twitter handle. He is literally right now retweeting entire clips of the impeachment from Mark Meadows.
But in his defense, that doesn't mean he watched the clips. He said that he read his son's book, and we know that didn't happen.
That's funny.
So anyway, so that's Lindsey Graham. For the media figures, we've got Sean Hannity, who we don't actually talk about very often on this show for reasons that will become apparent, because we're gonna show you 59 seconds of Sean Hannity's show, which is basically everything that his show is condensed down into 59 seconds. And if you wanna know what millions and millions of Americans are going to be learning or not learning as we go through this process, take a look at the sort of media they'll be consuming as impeachment goes forward.
It is impeachment eve. The circus is coming to town, and we are just now hours away from the corrupt, compromised, coward, and congenital liar Adam Schiff show on Capitol Hill, brought to you by him and his fellow raging psychotic Democrats and their top allies in the media mob. First, know this. This is important. Everything you're going to see in the next 2 weeks is rigged. This is a phony show trial. There is zero due process, none. It is yet another fraudulent hoax, conspiracy theory. It is another witch hunt. It is wrought with rampant putrid hypocrisy, a repulsive double standard. By the way, it's all bad for the country, but this is what your Democratic Socialist Party has become. This is who they are. This is what defines them, frankly, perfectly.
So that might have sounded like a weird right winger at a bar ranting, but he was reading that off a teleprompter. That was what he wanted to deliver. And I immediately thought, we're on a lot of different platforms and everything, TYT, but we're an online show. We're not serious. You can just say whatever you want. He called them raging psychotic Democrats, implies that he thinks that the current Democratic Party is a socialist party, implying that he doesn't pay attention to anything of what they actually say. That was a expensive to produce show with dozens and dozens of staff members that is nothing better than just like having like an AI read Twitter comments,
but
basically.
All it is like applause lines. That's what they're going for. And it's like it's a stand-up routine, but instead of jokes, it's just lingo. It's just terms. It's code words to his base. It's vocab. It's words like mob media, socialist, showtime, sham, fake. Yeah. It happened on that show. And he's talking about like this media conspiracy that's all weaved together with the people in power in Congress. If you listen to Devin Nunes' opening statement, it's exactly like that.
Yeah.
It is just like a bunch of the vocab words from the BS glossary of the Trump diatribes pieced together with conjunctions.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the little parts that annoyed me, although I do understand it, is he said that this impeachment inquiry is a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory, but they like to use that term to apply it to legitimate investigations of crimes that Trump has already committed to, because Sean Hannity likes to spread actual conspiracy theories and he wants to sap the word of all of its meaning. He's the one doing months of shows about Uranium One and stuff like that, and he doesn't want to be criticized for spreading actual conspiracy theories. So now they apply the term to literally everything.
Yeah, and Lindsey Graham's not alone when it comes to like not watching this. There's a whole group of senators who said that I'm not going to watch this. They pledged not to watch it. Mm-hmm. We're too busy. We think it's a sham. It's absolutely not. To say that this lacks due process, he's trying to make you think that what's happening now on TV is exactly like the rules that govern an episode of Law and Order.
Yeah,
and or some kind of crime drama that you see. It's not the same thing. It never has been the same thing. And you know why? The Constitution.
Yeah.
The Constitution of the United States says that there needs to be eventually a trial in the Senate. Like,
yeah.
That's it. And you can come up with the rules as you want. There's a whole political article that says technically, if three Republican senators say we want a secret vote, we can do that.
Yeah.
Like, those are the rules. And if you have a problem with that, you have a problem with the very founders you purport to support undyingly till the end of time. But you don't. You just choose what's convenient for you in the moment. And that's un-American.
And Lindsey Graham is pretending that because we're not in that trial, because we're not doing what will happen in that trial, that the current state is invalid. The thing is, he knows that he's wrong. He was involved in the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton. And this, he doesn't support this impeachment because it's a threat to the presidency. But when he thought that he could impeach Bill Clinton over lying about a blowjob, that was perfectly acceptable. That wasn't a threat to any presidency or anything like that. And Sean Hannity, this whole thing is a sham trial. If they had actually tried to impeach Barack Obama over that tan suit, Sean Hannity would have just had an hour-long orgasm on his show for 6 months. But he pretends that this, an actual investigation based on multiply corroborated both first and secondhand accounts of this quid pro quo, is unacceptable on its face. And the only reason we show it to you is so you understand that for all that we learn in this trial, and we will learn a lot, millions of Americans will be doing their best to only consume media that will make sure that they are insulated from it.
And I want to say for the record that on this show, it was John who said blowjob, orgasm.
That's what it was about.
And on its face.
That was not connected directly to it. But anyway.
Your words.
So let's transition to a different topic. I'm gonna just, this will be smooth. So we're gonna smoothly transition to a different topic. Talk about unicorns some more, huh? Okay, I know where that was going. Do you know about the actual origin of the myth of unicorns, what that's about? Anyway, I don't want to talk about that while picture Hillary Clinton is next to me. So we're just gonna go right into it. Hillary Clinton is not currently running in the Democratic primary, but that doesn't mean that she won't. Take a look at her recent appearance on the BBC.
Are you going to run again?
No.
That is 100%. So in a few days, I'm not going to open my newspaper.
Well, you know, I never say never to anything.
You've only got a few days left.
It's way past time. But you know, I think all the time about what kind of president I would have been and what I would have done differently and what I think it would have meant to our country and the world. So of course, I think about it. I think about it all the time.
Okay, so that's one thing. And she does say that she's not going to there. But in the second clip, take a look at one of the things she says. That's what makes me a little bit worried that this isn't just idle speculation.
Bill Clinton, your dad, your husband, didn't rule it out last month when talking to Georgetown. Mm. He said, I can't rule it out. So you are ruling it out.
Well, look, I, as I say, never say never. And I will certainly tell you, I'm under enormous pressure from many, many, many people to think about it. But as of this moment, sitting here in this studio talking to you, that is absolutely not in my plans.
So it's not in her plans, but she had an opportunity to totally rule it out. And that's not the thing. It's the, I mean, lots of people want me to. Why are you bringing that up if you have no interest in it?
I want her to.
You like pragmatically?
Yeah, let's do the same thing over and over again.
I get where you, I agree with you. No, I don't, it's too risky. But it would be exciting. Okay, let's have a run.
No, I was just saying, like, let's do the same thing over and over again. I get very frustrated when I hear people in the media say, we just need to be slightly less than Trump and run a moderate who, and invariably, no matter who is tossed out there name-wise, it is someone who has been part of the Washington world for years and years and years. And they say that as if that didn't just happen.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating thing. And they fight against trying something new. That is just something that logically doesn't hold together for me, and it makes me want to bang my head against a wall.
Okay, I would guess that it's not going to happen, that she's not gonna run, but she could make it a lot easier to not have to guess by actually ruling it out. And instead, once a month, she gets asked something about this and she's like, well, you know, maybe, maybe not, I'm not gonna do it, but like lots of people want me to, wouldn't it be awesome if I did? I don't want that kind of ambiguity. We've got a packed field already. Now we've got Bloomberg saying he might enter it. Deval Patrick might enter it. It's too late for any new people to enter. We've had so many candidates. It's the biggest Democratic field in decades. Let's choose from among the ones we have. We have some pretty awesome candidates, one of which I endorsed. You can go to the YouTube channel and see that video. Okay, we're taking a short break for my favorite story of all time. Woke up to some breaking news this morning on the Twitter account of Intercept reporter Aida Chavez, who had this image in one of her tweets. Now, if you don't know what that is, that appears to be a story from Instagram of Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez ranking up in ranked play in League of Legends. Now, Ida's a bit of a troll sometimes, so I said, that's not real, right? And she said, no, it is. And so I went to Instagram, which is what I should have done initially. It was up on her stories. That's amazing. But what's more amazing, if we could bring that back up, I don't know how many of you play League of Legends, which is a game I played for literally years. It's that she had been promoted to Silver 4. That's not bad. Actually, I never made it to Silver 4 in ranked League of Legends.
You might have heard this morning when John found out about this, you might have heard from your bedroom or office, someone going, what? How?
How many elected representatives, let alone representatives that you admire and look to politically, play video games and especially let people know about it? And so when Ida tweeted out Gamers Rise TF Up, I thought, yes, at last, finally. And AOC even liked her tweet about that. That's amazing, come on.
When we found out that Jordan and Klippenstein played Fortnite, we were excited.
We were, because we think, well, you know, we try to do some serious work, but we also game quite a bit. Surely not other professionals do.
The idea John put 7 minutes in the rundown.
Get out of here.
Yeah. You know, if we go over, we'll just do an extra video. No, that's not true. But it is great because.
Thank you.
I think it's just very symptomatic of like an entire shift in generation. Mm-hmm. You know, the equivalent of this is like when you see like Bernie Sanders playing baseball. You know, or you see like Barack Obama, he did a bunch of videos where he was like shooting hoops.
Yeah.
Like this is basically that for like the next generation. It's that thing that we all kind of do that someone, it's so humanizing to see someone that also like sits in those hearings and asks those questions that are also biting and well crafted and well executed within the halls of Congress, but still understandable, to then just be like, yeah, I'm just gonna, you know,
yeah,
I'm gonna flag a couple frames of League.
Yeah, and not, and by the way, not just,
term. That's I'm very bad.
I don't know what that means.
I did voiceover on the beta version.
You did, as Maokai. And not just playing it, but playing ranked. I almost never played ranked because people get really toxic, but she's used to toxicity in politics, so she can take it. And so I did a little bit of research on this story, not on any of the others. And turned out she has tweeted about League of Legends before, and I must have missed it. But back in October of last year, she tweeted current status, dusting off my League account, which hasn't been touched since the campaign started. Bronze 5, here we come. Bronze 5 is the lowest rank, effectively. And then I had the obvious follow-up question. Who's her main in League of Legends? Turned out she had tweeted about that too, saying, Morgana, Lux, Miss Fortune, working on Anivia. I'm pretty bad at it, so let's temper our expectations here. But lo and behold, not that bad, because she just got to Silver 4. So she's not a Teemo main. So any of you Teemo mains out there, this is a disappointing day. But you know, Miss Fortune, she's one of my favorites. So
hey, what's your main?
I mean, I haven't played in quite a while, but Miss Fortune was up there.
We used to play together.
We did.
Back in the day.
When I used to play games. Yeah.
Yep.
Not much time for that anymore.
I remember being in those, just going like, these guys are way better than me at all this.
We were good. We played a lot. But for like, to put it in terms you can like recognize, what if she put up a battle royale, like she'd won a Fortnite
Victory
match.
Victory Royale, yeah.
Victory Royale.
I would be very excited. It's just great.
Yeah,
it's just real.
I just want people who are like us, and this is about as like us as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah,
as always.
I feel very honored to be here.
Yeah,
on
there were a couple moments where it got dicey, but
I'm not used to a Wednesday, John.
No, I know. Well, we'll have JR back at some point. This isn't it, by the way. If you stick around, if you're a member, we're gonna be streaming live a little bit of overtime. How are Fox and MSNBC approaching their impeachment coverage? There's some pretty big differences there that we're gonna break out. So stick around for the overtime and you'll be able to see that. We'll see you on the other side. So as we record this, millions of Americans are watching the impeachment hearings, which are now public as of today. But they're not all watching it in the same place. Some people are gonna be watching it on C-SPAN or PBS, but some will be watching it on the big cable news networks, on, for instance, MSNBC and Fox News. And depending on which one they go on, they're seeing the same testimony, but it's not being presented in exactly the same way. Let's go through a quick little example. So as Bill Taylor, the ambassador who had this big bombshell today, is testifying, here's what you saw if you were watching MSNBC. A few facts about him. He was the top US diplomat in Ukraine since June. He testified that he had a clear understanding that aid was tied to probes and texted it would be crazy to withhold Ukraine military aid. Now, choosing those things, you know, that is a frame, I guess, but all of those are facts. If you were watching Fox News, though, they chose to focus on some other facts. Take a look at this. A little timeline saying October 23rd, President Trump dismissed Taylor as a never Trumper.
Has nothing to do with him,
and it doesn't mean anything. It's not based on anything, but you wouldn't know that to look at the graphic. White House called Taylor's closed door testimony triple hearsay,
which is itself like not even hearsay. It's just a conjecture based on their approach, which, by the way, is convenient to them to call it based on hearsay.
Yeah.
It's not based on hearsay.
And what is triple hearsay? He was the ambassador. He was talking with Sondland. They're involved in this effort. And then finally, GOP says Taylor had no firsthand knowledge about Ukraine aid, which is sort of just saying the same thing as the second one. But like, you basically learn nothing there. You learn that the White House, Trump, and the GOP, which are effectively the same thing at this point, don't like him. That's it.
But like, the first over the shoulder that you saw was just facts about the guy, like his bio. And the rest was just a series of insults hurled by people with a vested interest in mischaracterizing this guy.
Exactly. And it wasn't just for Bill Taylor. Adam Schiff had the same sort of thing. But let me just focus on two of the graphics that Fox decided to put up for Schiff. The first one, this is important news that you need to know, is that Trump has tweeted about Schiff more than 100 times since the inquiry began. I would argue that says more about Trump than about Schiff, but they included it.
Obsessed.
Trump has repeatedly implied that Schiff has committed treason. They just stayed it there. Yeah, oh, crazy accusation. We're just gonna put it there as if it's an important fact. And GOP wants Schiff to testify about contacts with whistleblower. So none of that has to do with the actual content of the impeachment hearing. And I have a feeling it's not like they're fitting in like pop-up video some extra facts. I would guess that many of the Fox guests are saying similar things too.
Of course they are, because by the way, that's how you get invited back places, is people just parrot the hell out of whatever. And you can see who's better and worse at it. It's hilarious to watch like first timers be like, oh God, I memorized this in front of the mirror this morning.
Yeah.
The White House whistle, we need to know the whistleblower's name.
Yeah, and that wasn't the only one. They had another graphic of additional facts about Schiff. House GOP has supported censuring Schiff for actions during inquiry. Again, it's like, yeah, they have a clear vested interest in doing that. 9/26, Schiff publicly exaggerated substance of Trump Zelensky call. Never has so much effort been put into pretending to not understand that something was a joke.
Yes.
He made a joke.
Before he says, this is essentially what happened, he does an impression of it.
He did an impression.
And then at the end says, that's essentially what happened on the call. Yeah. Like, it is like, say, it's like, and Trump does that all the time. Trump says stuff like, the Democrats hate law and order. They love crime. So where's your quote then?
Yeah.
So maybe we should censor Trump for saying that trying to quote the Democrats as saying they love crime. No one has ever said that.
Yeah. That's,
Trump did way worse stuff.
Yeah, it's, yeah, what we want is freedom of speech, and we want people to not get down on comedians. But when a guy makes a joke, we're gonna do for months, we're gonna pretend that he was being dead serious.
So ridiculous.
It's insane. So anyway, that's basically what you're getting if you're watching this. The facts presented orally from the actual people testifying might be the same, but what you're gonna be learning in the lower thirds and on the side is going to be very different. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all the time we have. Thank you for sticking around for this overtime. That's the close of the show, but we've got a lot planned, obviously, for the rest of the week. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.